Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and I want to welcome to the studio Chris Rayner, Deputy Chair of the Community Board. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Aaron.
So how are you doing this time of morning?
Yeah, good.
Is it nighttime DJ?
Beautiful day. No.
Sometime nighttime DJ. When was the last time you DJed?
I've actually taken a couple of months off.
Right.
Yeah, trying to work on some other projects. So.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And then amongst that, you've got to work on community issues as well.
We had
the board meeting last Wednesday, and there were people there talking about freedom camping issues again. Is this ever going to go away, do you think, this issue?
No, I don't, to be honest. I mean, there's been the bylaw, there's been the central government law, there's been obviously a number of processes that now are in place, and I think it's up to us to work out how we engage with the freedom campers. Because it's not like you're just going to be pushing them around and we're going to become someone else's problem somewhere else. It's like if we don't try to fix the behavior, we don't really have the tools to.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the tools, because we've just had a review of the bylaw. And for people who don't know, the government legislation says that you can only ban street by street. You can't ban the whole town. And so we're playing whack-a-mole in a lot of ways, eh?
Yes, we are.
And the latest place they popped up this summer apparently was James Street. And what were they saying? 18 to 30 campers outside their place every night. This couple turned up to have a talk. And some of the campers, of course, are going in and I think they were stealing some veggies. No, tomatoes.
Yeah, tomatoes.
Tomatoes and tapping into the water supply, arguing amongst themselves outside. Also, were locals giving them a hard time as well?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so it's not exactly a convivial atmosphere. At the time, and you talked about the apps that are basically funneling everyone into one place.
Yeah, the apps highlight hotspots, which basically other campers identify as good for freedom camping. I know that over summer the council funded a freedom camping ambassador, so there wasn't a compliance officer. They weren't dishing out fines, but they were actually a younger guy going around and talking to people, explaining about how to do recycling and you know, where some public loos are and basic stuff. But I think, if we could get the Freedom Camping Ambassador role fully funded.
And armed.
Yeah, well, the idea of the ambassador is that they actually try to change the behaviour of the community of Freedom Campers from within.
But the thing every week there's new Freedom Campers in the country, so it's an ongoing thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have you ever tried? I don't know if you've tried it. I've never got the app out, but can other people who aren't Freedom Campers just get on the app and start redirecting people?
No, I think it's based on inputs. Like, I mean, you could say I stayed at that spot and all these bad things happened and try and like get that spot, you know, downgraded. I guess I don't know. I used the app when I was in the South Island like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Found it really useful.
Yeah, of course. Although the irony is that when you get too much, it's actually, like, it feels safer in a group as Freedom Campers, but in this situation, you're better off separated.
Yeah, well, it depends.
Not drawing attention to yourself en masse.
Yeah, it totally depends. I stayed in a spot in Takaka that was, you know, considered a hot spot and a problem down there. And, you know, me and my mates and a couple of other vans, we did a big tidy up of the area and kind of, hey guys, look, come on, look, let's actually just pick up this rubbish over here and put it over there. They've put a bloody skip bin for there for us.
You know? Yeah.
And there's still rubbish scattering around. So I don't know. It's going to be a long, challenging issue that's only going to get worse as tourism picks up and when the economies around the world rebound, there's going to be a lot more people traveling in that way.
What I was interested in is that the lady who was talking from James Street said that she'd talked to Barbara Couriger, and I think Barbara Couriger directed her back to the council. I think that's what she said. But ultimately, I think the issue is the legislation, because it doesn't give communities the power to do something constructive.
Central government thinks they've dealt with it with the new legislation. It's going to be forcing vans to have plumbed-in toilets.
Yeah.
So. But then who's going to monitor that? Who's going to pay for the monitoring? And how, I mean,
and that doesn't stop people stealing tomatoes and water.
I think their view of the law change is that it's going to Freedom campers are going to be people with more expensive vans who are potentially a bit older, who maybe have learned a few things in life and are not such inconsiderate people. So,
but we know that the young ones who are fresh out of home for the first time in their life, they're still going to be turning up, and they still think of New Zealand as this great place of freedom, like the European kids do.
Yep.
So, and you've been there, I've been there, you know, we know those kids.
Yep. So, and without a boost in kind of compliance and monitoring, like you said, it's going to be whack-a-mole. And
will the community board, I mean, is there much you can do? Can you ask for more compliance officers from council?
We can jump up and down. But, the bylaw has been reviewed, and it's not set up to be reviewed. Going forward for the next 5 years, I think the only way is to try to engage with the whole freedom camping scene, whether it's the apps or the campers themselves or potentially some of the van rental companies to get education, or sign it. And like I said, advocating for that ambassador role full-time, because as you said, there's a turnover of people coming and going. So if the freedom camping ambassador was a full-time role, maybe more hours in summer and a few less days in winter, whatever, that person will obviously kind of step into that role and hopefully when people arrive at Raglan, they notice a difference. And then they leave maybe a better freedom camp. But there was...
That's a nice thought, isn't it?
Yeah, Lisa had a really good idea, Lisa Thompson, about a Raglan freedom camping passport, you know, and that actually kind of like engaged with some people and let them have so many nights and so many spots. That was something that potentially could be developed. But all of these things take time, effort, money, energy.
Yeah, and as clearly it's about engagement rather than compliance at this point.
For the next 5 years. And obviously, as those stricter laws around the plumbed and toilets come into force, we will need some support from council in regards to compliance, because the law is only as good as the enforcement.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so that was one tricky problem. Teuku Recycling Centre, there was a report and three staff from Extreme Inn. They'd done some research into what is a bit of a festering sore at the moment with the Teuku Recycling Centre. And basically, there's no staff, and that seems to be the cause of the problem. Is that your feeling?
Yeah, I mean...
Well, not the cause. Cause is people misbehaving. Yeah,
hats off to Extreme. They really got in front of this one.
Yeah.
And it's been going on for a while, but they didn't engage an extensive survey and to understand the issues of the rural recycling unmanned drop-off spots. And I'm not sure if you remember, there used to be a couple more that closed down because of like the entrance of Manga Tawhiri and the entrance of Tomato Road.
The one at Manga Tawhiri or Tomato, one of those was the worst because people would just be driving to the surf or something.
Yeah, so they've got rid of those and they've upgraded the one further into Tomato, or rebuilt a new one in Tomato that seems to be operating as it should. And then Teuku is just getting slammed with a huge amount of volume. I think the report which they did was exceptional, and at this stage they're just trying to understand the problem. The next phase of the process is, and they said themselves, is to come up with some solutions and then try and work through the feasibility of those solutions.
Do you think it's ever going to work without a staff member being there? There's no one to ensure compliance. Like, it was funny, they said that the survey they did went for 8 days, and during that time, while this people doing the survey were there, there was no illegal dumping during that specific time. So, but then they'd come back the next morning and there'd be all sorts of things piled up.
It's a challenge around everywhere that these unmanned waste and recycling drop-offs exist. It's a huge challenge, and I think they are going back to the drawing board to come up with some solutions. And whether one thing we talked about in the meeting was, does it make any sense to try and decentralize the Teuku ones, or have a couple of small ones further away from the main road? And then there's pros and cons for everything. Or there's other communities in the North Waikato that have no unmanned drop-offs, but they have special days once per month or mobile mobile units that set up shop for 24 hours or something on a particular corner on a particular day, you know, and then get all the, but it's again, they're gonna, it's in a process of engaging with the rural community there and putting it out there to see what works for them,
yeah,
and what they would, and because they're paying for it and it, but it's not covering its costs, so
because Extreme's having to do extra work.
Extreme's having to do extra work
because people from Raglan, are dumping there
and
as
there's
well.
Some people from Raglan, so but the that service is paid for out of a targeted rate for those who are not on the curbside collection.
Yeah.
So I think they're in a process of working out what is a solution that will work for that community, how much it's going to cost on their rates, and it'll hopefully be ready to be implemented in the next contract when Extreme's contract comes up.
Mm. Okay, so yeah, it's another sticky one. And while Extreme were there, they were talking about the rubbish bins filling up at Papahua over summer. The guys on the trucks would empty the bins, come back an hour later, and they'd be overflowing again. And the discussion was had about actually getting rid of bins, and people who go to parks and eat food can take their rubbish home with them.
Yeah,
this has been tried in other places.
In Rotorua, yeah.
Yeah, Blue Lake, which is
yeah.
which is not, that's not a built up area, like that's
no.
you're out of Rotorua by then, and yeah, it's a pristine environment. It was Papahua is a bit more built up.
Yeah.
I don't know, what do you think about that?
Again, you'd have to lay out say 3 or 4 different ideas. That could be one of the ideas, and then you basically try and work out what's the best practical option. I'm not so sure that that would work. Again, it's you'd have to look at studies from other territories to see a lot of the behaviour there. There is an argument, like, do like lots and lots of bins encourage people to like put lots and lots of waste out?
Yeah.
And there's a whole kind of thinking, I think, in the waste management kind of industry, if you like, around how to get people to sort or recycle or take their own, or
basically take responsibility for their own rubbish.
Exactly.
Really,
yeah.
That's and that. I mean, that's the all this discussion we've been having is all because there's people who just want to dump it and forget about it.
Yeah, and there's the volume is ever increasing as well.
Yeah,
you know? So. As that volume increases, it just seems to get easier and easier for people to turn a blind eye. And
okay, well, we'll wait to hear, I guess, if someone comes up with a bright idea.
Yeah.
About that. I haven't asked anyone this, or I can't remember asking. Did the community board make a submission to the annual plan? Were there specific issues that you guys submitted on?
For the Waikato District one?
The District Council annual plan that's just closed a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I believe so. I'll have to check with the other board members.
All right. The CCTV issue, I ask every community board member who comes in about this, has there been any progress?
It's ongoing.
It's ongoing. that's what everybody says. It's out of our council's hand, isn't it?
It's a relationship between council and police and then the providers who are doing the tech. And obviously the money that they have been awarded is spread out across the main centres, so Huntly, Ngāruwahia,
Te
Kauwhata, Raglan. So we're still in the mix, but it's until we hear of what's the next stage, we're kind of just
waiting
and see.
Okay, speaking of waiting, we've been waiting to hear stuff about the Manu Bay breakwall for a while. But I understand you can tell us something. A positive thing has happened.
A report, an extensive report, has finally landed, multi-document report that is going out, I believe, to stakeholders. I think we just saw it early last week.
Yeah.
And it actually has potential solutions in the back end of the report. Five of them. And
For people who don't know, the problem is the old wall used to slap the waves back and interfere with the waves, and the new wall avoided that, but then ended up with waves constantly overtopping and putting boulders on the ramp on the other side. So that was no good either. So have they come up, are they trying to work on some solutions that try to fix both problems?
Yeah, so Manu Bay is a surf break of national significance. Mm. So you can't legally do anything that would affect the surf in a negative way.
Yeah.
So that's probably half the reason it's taken so bloody long for all of this process to go forward. But yeah, there seems to be four or five options in the report, and I think one of them stands out as a potential best possible option.
But we've got to wait for
it to take the rounds of the interested parties. And it's got to go to stakeholders.
And then money.
And then money. And I believe there is some money set aside, but is it enough? Well, there'll have to be obviously a more detailed costing once they do land on the exact best possible option. There's been a lot of progress finally. It's been a real long, dragged-out process. And I think Dennis, our chairperson of the board, is kind of sticking with it. Good on him.
It's caused him a lot of frustration.
It has caused him a lot of frustration.
Because he's used to working in the construction industry and things getting done, and this seemed to get put on somebody's back burner for a long time.
Yeah.
The project seems slightly cursed because this all started when Clint Baddeley was our councillor. And Lisa's been in that job for 7 years now.
The glacial pace of local body politics.
How are you enjoying that?
It's nice and slow.
Yeah, if that's what you're looking for.
I'm joking, but yeah, it's...
I mean, have you had to like mentally adjust?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. What else were we going to talk about? You've seen the news about the Māori wards and the government wanting to get rid of them. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think the Waikato one is safe. I've only briefly scanned over that, but they...
I haven't looked at it.
Yeah, the article that I read seemed to imply that the Waikato and another territory's Māori wards were fine.
We should look this up.
It's going to go back to the way it used to be, whereas a small majority of people who oppose the Māori ward can initiate a referendum on its existence.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely worth looking up a little bit more. But as I understand,
remember who put the laws, RNZ or stuff? Or
yeah, it's real, in my opinion, backwards thinking, because the way it was set up was discriminatory.
Mm.
Where basically a very small kind of outdated minority could force a referendum on something that, in my mind, is actually working really well. We've got Tilly Turner as our Māori ward councillor, and she's doing a fantastic job.
Okay. I just wanted to ask you, because you live on the part of State Highway 23 that's now officially council road, and the speed has been dropped from 100 to 60 outside your place.
Yeah.
Has that brought some benefits to your life?
I can get in and out of my driveway.
Without fear of your life.
Yeah, well, it's definitely is a little bit bigger of a gap. But, yeah, I mean, seems to be working. I'm not sure, did I notice some guys working on the next section of State Highway 23 on that culvert in the last couple of weeks? So
you wouldn't have, because there's not been money. Like, there's potential for Waka Kotahi's long-term plan that they're doing this year to put aside some money for that.
Yeah.
I kept asking them about this, and they kept saying, we don't know because we haven't heard from the government about what their plans are. They're now announcing roads of national significance, and that might take money away from State Highway 23.
Because I know that the next section is, you know, where the intersection with Greenslade Road is really the clincher to try and make the whole entrance to Raglan safer.
That's the one that people are worried about.
That is the one that people are worried about.
Long term, Waka Kotahi want to drop the speed there anyway, around that corner, but they seem to move so slowly.
Yeah, and I think they've
profoundly slowly.
They've obviously had change of government and change of internal direction, which has probably hit the reset button on a lot of their work.
Yeah, so that's safety work, and I've heard that the roads of national significance, those plans aren't that as much into safety, so we might have to wait for a different government. All right, so folks, for that intersection, it could be a while. That's what we're surmising here. You were at the wharf opening, was that a couple of weeks ago now?
Week on Friday, I guess.
So is that pleasing? That's like a project that's been and happened while you've been on the community board. Must be nice to see.
Absolutely. That was quite the highlight. Just to see the whole thing completed and all of the parties that have contributed to that and the blessing from Mana Whenua. It was really kind of exciting. And just to see what can be achieved when we work together and we get a bunch of money from the central government.
Yeah, that helped. Are there still people around who think that we were wasting council rates?
Yeah, well, obviously, as soon as you do something, people are going to assume the worst. But, yeah, like those of us who have been involved with the project or even on looking up to the project, they know how much value for money we got from that wharf project, you know.
Yeah. Okay, there was one other thing. I want to keep this issue alive, which is the issue of a town plan or a structure plan or something like that for Raglan, which seems to be low on the council's priority list, but
yeah,
is obviously a problem for us because we have our developers arguing amongst themselves about where roads are going to go.
It's not low on our list.
No, not the community board's list. No, yeah. I know. And I know that prior to Dennis Amor or Bob McLeod was trying to get something to happen there. Yeah.
So we've basically kind of started to say to the council very clearly that one of the things we want to achieve in this trimester, which has, you know, got about a year and a half to run, is to set up the framework, not necessarily create the plan itself, but to set up the framework for a vision plan, both, you know, for the CBD and whatever they want to call it. They want to call it a structure plan, they want to call it a CBD growth plan. We don't really care what it's called.
Any kind of plan would be a good plan.
We would like to see, you know, a plan that, or the building blocks of how to create a plan that gets updated with a 10, 20, and 50-year outlook, and to actually identify growth areas, you know, so that we can have things like light industrial or high-tech jobs or
sports parks.
Yeah, all of these things.
New school.
Yeah, where there's all of these growth-related issues. We want to have at least leave the end of this kind of trimester with the building blocks of where those plans get developed and the community brings together all their ideas and their kind of passion of how, because if we don't engage with growth and we just let it and we go, oh, no, we want to, everything, you know, then it's just going to happen. Like, it's going to
and
be
there is a tendency
back deals between developers. And
yeah, and there is a tendency for that in our community to just want to stop growth, but that hasn't worked.
Doesn't work.
Ever so, in the world. Yeah.
So, I mean, and smart growth with the community engaged is, yeah, that's probably one of the biggest things we want to leave for our current board group, is that we can actually, like we were saying in our meeting the other day, our vision is to have a vision.
This is what happens when you get involved with the council, isn't it?
Yeah.
Vision is to have a vision, and that vision is a good future.
Yeah.
So, folks, it sounds slow and ponderous, but you have to have council documents that do certain things.
And
that's
just
the reality.
And we have to meet with the right people in council. So the strategic planning group, I believe that they are going to be setting up a meeting with us and the strategic planners, because those are the guys and girls that do nut out a lot of things. And then there's a draft transport strategy.
I was going to ask you about that for Raglan.
Yeah, that's a wider. That's not just town. That's a little bit wider scope. In terms of a resilience, obviously the one lane bridge, alternative access ways, and that kind of thing. And so we are going to be having a workshop.
That's actually a big issue for us, as we found out when we had the slip on State Highway 23. That really, you'd think, oh, an extra hour to get to Hamilton, okay, it's annoying, but it's not that big a deal. But it turned out to be there's a great source of problems.
There's a few bottlenecks in the network that are easily identifiable, and we need to see how vulnerable those bottlenecks are to basically, disturbing the transport network.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the major issue of the maintenance on the unsealed roads. That's come up again and again, and I believe that the Alliance have started working up to Hutawai.
Yeah, I was up there last week.
Yeah.
And, definitely.
But it's all over our area's unsealed roads.
But what about also, John Lawson brought up the issue of State Highway 23, because he was submitting to the future-proof people who are far more concerned about the State Highway 1 corridor. But if the projections for population growth in Raglan are like doubling or quadrupling, but if there's no work done on State Highway 23, imagine State Highway 23 with twice as many cars on it. Like, how's that going to go?
Yeah, wow, that's... This seems to be endemic of the whole issue that, like, New Zealand, if you like, faces. We're adding the equivalent of a Dunedin every year or two, but we're not building the equivalent of a Dunedin in terms of roads, hospitals, schools. So this has been one of the major issues facing the country for the last 15 years is, like, you can add population to, you know, boost your, looks like your economy is growing, but just adding more people, bums on seats, without building more roads, schools, hospitals.
More seats.
Exactly. So it's, that's one of the major issues that the whole country is facing. It's not unique to Raglan, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think every time we talk about the little, because it causes lots of little problems, and every time one of those little problems comes up for a discussion, we need to always tie it back to that overarching issue that we're not building infrastructure for the amount of people coming here, because otherwise people just start scrapping amongst themselves over, you know, we want to spend money on roads. No, we want to spend it on this. You know, there's not enough money. Well, it's a bigger problem.
John pointed out, obviously, a better, more frequent bus service is one way to alleviate pressure on the roads. So if there was, you know, over summer, if we had a, you know, every hour kind of bus service, as soon as frequency on these public transport networks is increased and you know, oh, I can just turn up and I've got to wait a little bit, I don't have to time my whole day around this one bus.
Yeah.
People start to use public transport a lot more.
Yeah, but it just depends if people at the right levels take it seriously.
Yeah.
Maybe we need a new generation.
We have
different views on driving.
Yeah, I mean, try go to Auckland and back, mate.
I have a couple of times recently, and unfortunately, I did it outside of peak times.
Yeah,
yeah, because I mean, it's almost at peak time all day, every day.
Yeah, you've only
working days.
Yeah, it's insane.
It?
You got a small window, I think, between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. where you might get across the city.
Hey, folks, I've been talking to Chris Rayner, our Deputy Chair of the Community Board. Thank you for coming in. Chris, it's time to move on. I've got another interview coming in a sec, so thank you for that. And good luck, especially keeping on like the future planning issue for the town. Like, I see the issues around that everywhere that I'm looking at this stuff all the time. But
yeah, and that's one of our major goals, is to set up the right framework so that that discussion can then flourish. So we'll probably be spending this winter talking a lot to council staff and planners and whatnot, and what kind of structure we want for, or how does this look, and then hopefully by this time next year, before local body elections come around, we've actually got something that people can put something all of their
something they can vision. React to
yeah or, exactly
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, all right, Chris, thanks for coming in.